everyone, and welcome. This is episode 330 of Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast, part of the MKE Tailgate Network. I'm James, joined by Ryan and a very frustrated dad and Paul. It's been a while since we had a kid.
I'm not going to get into why, but yeah.
We had a mild kid delay tonight as we record this on Sunday night. So been a while since we had one of those, but everything's fine. Hopefully your plumbing's fine. Yeah. No. Other than that, how's your weekend been? Yeah.
This has been a very hectic weekend. Draft coverage notwithstanding, we had just a zillion family activities, like back to back to back to back to back. We also had a food poisoned child who food poisoned themselves by making poor choices.
Oh, no.
At one point. Unrelated to tonight. I'm glad this weekend is over, and I'll be happy to start over fresh tomorrow.
Yeah, on the other hand, I'm hating the idea of tomorrow because I screwed up my work computer tonight and did something very foolish, and so now I'd be spending all day tomorrow trying to like recover what I screwed up on it tonight. So I'm coming in like hot off of like 20 minutes ago just being absolutely livid. So I get to complain about umpires, though, so that'll be cathartic. That'll get me to just let loose. So yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do.
Healthy behavior there. You should stop pirating Phish albums on your work device, Ryan.
No, don't have to do that. That's I have plenty of access to Phish, not on my work device.
Got all that. we've got some umpiring to talk about, and Aaron Judge's ginormous hands and all that stuff. So before we get to that and all of our questions, a reminder, you can become a patron to help support us out. Throw a couple of bucks our way at patreon.com/MKETailgate. $2 a month guarantees your questions get answered both on this podcast and on reporting as eligible. And I'm sure a lot of you have draft questions after this past week.
Yes. A quick note. We will be recording on Wednesday this week to accommodate schedules.
There we go. Yeah. Should be definitely a good one. Looking forward to see what your guys' insight is on that. $5 a month gets you the question priority plus the additional exclusive content that includes the minor league extra with Ryan and new co-host Spencer Michaelis. And Ryan, you were glowing about the first minor league extra with Spencer. You want to share how that went?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's really, really good stuff. Just running over a lot of things. We really kind of talked about breakouts in the system, even though we had to start with the bad news stuff, though a lot of those things are turning around. Gosser is throwing, and he just threw four innings last week. Sounds like he's maybe going to do one more start and then potentially be with the big league club. So there's some good stuff happening there. But yeah, if you are in a dynasty league and are looking for some tips as to who you should be picking up, sorry, you're not hearing this until after the Sunday night fab runs. But if you listened during the weekend to that, you would know to go out and grab a couple of different Brewers pitchers that are in the midst of really breaking out right now. So, yeah.
There you go. There's your incentive to go sign up $5 a month and get the minor league extra there. You also, at that level, get the reporting as eligible mini pods with Paul, which, again, I'm sure plenty to talk about that may or may not make it onto the main pod. So.
Exactly. Yeah, there'll definitely be a mini pod this week for sure, doing whatever wrap-up we can't do. I mean, they picked I don't think they ended up picking 11 guys, but they picked a lot of guys.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of an unusual draft, although they did what they normally do and they stacked positions. This was the safety stack and offensive line, I think, just because they needed them, but safety stack for sure. And there's mixed reviews on this one. It'll be interesting to talk about because the sort of normal positions of high value in football change with some routine. The nerds don't like this class because they took a lot of low value positions, but I don't think that's actually fair, especially on the defensive side, where I think that the war numbers on the defensive side of football are just trash and not worth paying attention to at all. Kind of like baseball used to be on the defensive side of war. It's a similar problem.
There you go. Yeah, definitely plugged a lot of holes, I think, just on the surface level. So just me as a casual fan Can't complain too much about it. Plenty of depth, and they needed depth. So, again, can't wait to hear what you guys talk about on reporting as eligible this week. Before we start with the Brewers, a reminder, even if you're not a patron, you can support us another way for free. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you're listening to us. Give us a 5-star review there. And while you're there, please do subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. All right, so turning to the Brewers, you know, kind of another up and down week, I guess, is the best way to put it. So they obviously came off the sweep of the Cardinals that we talked about last week's episode. Then they dropped the first couple in Pittsburgh because PNC Park is a house of horrors for them. They recovered, got the split there, won the series opener against the Yankees on Friday night in a game that was, I think, really early season contender for game of the year. Just very entertaining back and forth, even if it did feel like it went on forever. The Crew won in 11 games or 11 innings, I should say. Another great performance from the bullpen and some timely hitting up and down the lineup. But then, you know, I don't know if it's just the bullpen usage to this point or what have you, or just the Yankees being, you know, a murderer's row lineup. The less said about Saturday and Sunday, maybe the better. They did have front row seats, though, to one of the dumber ump shows that we've seen in recent memory, as Ryan referenced at the top. So since that's fresh in everyone's mind and Ryan needs, you know, a mood lifter, let's just start there. So I guess judging by some of your tweets, you guys had some thoughts on the sixth inning on Sunday. Ryan, do you want to go first?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So, yeah, this is one of those situations where, well, first off, we should probably start with the fact that the umpires did cop to the mistake, which is rare and good for them. And I think that this is one of those things where, more than anything, I feel like this was an honest mistake. They're admitting that, you know, now that they're seeing it, they're not trying to do the thing that from earlier in the week when we saw the umpire who clearly called out the wrong guy. On Monday, you saw this in New York, right? When Aaron Boone got tossed because a fan yelled at the umpire.
Oh, that was amazing. Sitting right behind him wouldn't shut up. Yeah, exactly. That was amazing.
And the umpire after the game came out and was like, well, they're claiming it was a fan, but like there was a blah, 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 blah.
Clearly hadn't watched the video before commenting, which was not a good idea.
Right. Yeah. Somebody needs to get in and tell them, like, no, you know what? Sometimes you just need to admit a mistake. And apparently somebody told them, you know, you kicked this call because as a group, somehow they did it. And it's weird because I was having a conversation with some friends in a DM, like, how is it? I get why, like, the second base umpire and the first base umpire are maybe concentrating on different things. So maybe their focus was on different things. I'm going to be very generous and give them the benefit of the doubt on that.
Sure.
What the hell are the home plate and third base umpires looking at when Aaron Judge sticks his huge paw? And I mean, like,
giant hands
with an extended glove that, like, I mean, like, he has big hands to begin with, but then he has this glove and, like, he basically is taking up, you know, all of the airspace. It's amazing this hasn't happened before. And yeah, he swats at the baseball, and this clearly is interference. Everybody
100%.
Everybody knows it's interference, and the umpires get together and decide, no, it's not interference. So what the hell were the home plate and third base umpires looking at? That was nobody watching the baseball to say, oh, hey, the reason that it just fell magically out of the sky was because this gigantic man with a huge meaty paw just swatted it out of the air. Did they think it just, like, fell on its own? Did it, you know, did they think it hit a bird Randy Johnson style? Like, what did they think happened to this baseball?
Well, it does have to be intentional, right? That's
the
main thing, and that's what their excuse was, and that's why it wasn't reviewable as well, because they ruled it was a judgment play, because they couldn't decide whether they couldn't review whether it was intentional or not. Now, if you see the replay, you realize how silly that is, because it was very obviously intentional.
Right.
And objective is not as objective as people think it is, but that is what their story was, and that's what they're sticking to.
Yeah, so I, like, there's no way that obviously he was trying to, as players do, and this was pointed out to me, that Rhys Hoskins, when he goes in on slides, he does this too. A lot of guys stick their arm up there, and the idea is to try to get the fielder to have to alter their throw. But the thing is, if you hit the hand, then it's supposed to be called. So this is the umpires just completely neglected to miss that thing. Like, Judge, in a sense, got unlucky here. But then he gave some cock and bull story about, like, oh, but I always do it that way. It was like, well, yeah, maybe you do, but you know what? It's still
like a matador every time.
But it doesn't matter. Yankees fans apparently were saying this too. It doesn't matter if you do that all the time. It's still not legal, and you still are supposed to get called out for it, and the umpires just completely kick the call. And one of the things that it came on the heels, because it was literally, I think, two pitches after there was a little bit of an incident. So Aaron Judge, first off, walked on three balls because the umpire just, I don't know what he was thinking, but he right. just imagined should've a strike as out. A ball. Yeah. It should have been when that at bat ended, and because it ended on 4-1, it should have been 3-2 at that point. So we didn't get to a concluding point on that, but Judge did still walk on three balls. If you go look at the fourth pitch in the sequence, it's quite clearly a strike. So there's that. But Abner Uribe kind of reacted poorly to this, and I grabbed a video of it. And when he was getting the baseball from the home plate umpire seemed to be almost like taunting him. There was some little interaction there where it was like, and they noted it on the broadcast. They were like, oh,
yep.
the home plate umpire, is he telling them, oh, yeah, I missed that call? And then they watched it back, and they're like, oh, no.
That's not what Uribe just shook his head like that was bull. Yeah, exactly.
And then he got back to the mound, and he kicked the dirt. So it had the whole thing had this feeling of ump show where it's like they're mad at Uribe for, you know, kicking dirt and whatever. So it seems like they somehow then missed this call, and it's the whole thing just had this ump show stench to it that was really obnoxious. But whatever, it's what's frustrating about it is obviously you can't know how things play out, but at that point it should have been two out, nobody on, and they did get the next batter, so that should have ended the sixth inning with the Brewers tied at five. And nothing that happens after that, everything that all of that sequence never should have happened. And I like all the runs that score, you know, the last four runs, obviously that's a situation where Jansen Junk, who had to pitch Saturday, is out there because he's just trying to eat innings, and he ends up giving up a bunch of runs too. None of that should have happened.
Right.
So it's frustrating from that perspective because it really was. You turn a tie game, and the Brewers had to fight and claw back into this game, and they turn a tie game into a, you know, what ends up being a 10-run win, and yep, it's
just nuked it.
Yeah, just nuked it on this one stupid bad call that you could clearly say none of this should have happened.
I mean, you could have gotten a third out too at any point before giving up seven runs. I mean, there is that.
Yeah,
it should have been the third out, but dear God, somebody please get another out after that. And it was annoying because they already had four outs by the time Uribe left with two outs, but it was an ugly inning. Bad weekend for the run differential for sure.
Hugely bad. And also, like, in that situation too, the Yankees were not making a ton of hard contact. There was also the aspect of you're watching just bleeders and things, especially the one that really, really sticks with me is Uribe put a 99, 100 mile an hour fastball about 3 inches above the zone, and their little backup catcher, Trevino, just slaps the ball and dribbles it through the middle.
Yeah.
And that was really the big thing, because at that point it goes from, I think it goes from six to seven. So at that point, the Yankees are taking a much larger lead, or I guess, it would have been 4-4. So at that point it goes from 5-4 to 7-4. And that was kind of where it was like, oh, okay, this game is, you know, more than likely over. And you're like, that was not a bad pitch at all. I don't know how he kind of got on top of it and managed to do what he did with it. So it was just one of those games. And the Brewers are due for some of these games because they've had all the hit luck early. And, so they're due for some of this regression to come back, but to have it come in that fashion is just particularly galling.
Yes, it is.
Very annoying to watch, too. All right, before we get to questions, that series came after, you know, we got some bad news about the pitching staff as well. The early season injury woes continuing. They got the news, the second opinion, that Wade Miley needs Tommy John surgery. So not only does that put him on the shelf for the rest of the year, also possibly ends his career, considering he's 37 years old. He did tell Todd Rosiak he's going to go through the process of rehabbing before making a decision about whether he wants to continue pitching. But obviously seems kind of unlikely given how he was already sort of being held together by paper clips and bubblegum there at the end. You know, maybe he ends up as a pitching coach or some sort or something like that whenever he decides to hang it up, because he seems to be pretty well liked in the clubhouse. But, you know, the Brewers had already used 9 different starting pitchers this year, and they used 10 all of last year. I looked this up. So obviously that's a lot to use in only 27 games compared to 162. And we did talk in our season previews about the need to replace, you know, not just Corbin Burnes, but Brandon Woodruff, and accounting for those 250 or so innings. Paul, you were big on mentioning that, and you know, we talked about they may have had plenty of bodies to throw at that problem. I don't think we envisioned having to use nearly a dozen guys in the first month. But now, you know, quality is sort of the question here. So I guess let's just start with, how bad of a bind does Miley being out for the year kind of put the Brewers in regards to that depth, Paul?
Pretty bad. It's not like just losing Wade Miley is the problem. It's that they've had so many other things bite them at the same time. I mean, I would say that it was probably a mistake to count on Wade Miley as much as they seemingly were to be their number two pitcher. But there were fallbacks. There was Gosser. There was a bunch of other guys. And it's just been really whittled down at this point to the point where it's just a huge loss that they don't have him anymore. And he's not coming back. So they have to make other plans. Like said before the season started, should maybe use an innings eater or two. And that is still true at this very moment, because it is just patching people together for, I mean, they're officially running a 6-man rotation, but Bryce Wilson is one of the people in the 6-man rotation, mm-hmm. which doesn't make it a 6-man rotation. It makes it a bullpen game every 6th-day rotation, which is a different thing and not good.
Yeah, I mean, they have gotten good starts out of him. They've been kind of lucky in that
stepped up. Not going to last, though.
Right, that you wouldn't expect it to last. And even if it does, you need Bryce Wilson. The way that this staff was structured, you need Bryce Wilson doing his Bryce Wilsoning in the middle innings, along with Brian Hudson doing his Brian Hudsoning there as well, as a way to bridge through some of these short starts. That was always part of the thing here. And the fact that he had to be bumped up has created a problem for them. But there are some good sides here. First off, one thing nobody was expecting, like what were we expecting, about 120 innings of Wade Miley? We weren't expecting 180, 200 innings of him.
Yeah, so, I'd say that's right. Best case scenario is that's what we were thinking.
Yeah, so it doesn't leave as big a gap as you generally losing your number two starter going into a season would leave you. Like, this is kind of a good news, bad news situation. So at least there's that. There's also, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Gosser does seem to be coming back. He pitched, like I said, 4 innings in AAA. And the quote from Murphy was, we'd like to give him one more in AAA and then, you know, see where we are. So it sounds like they are pretty quickly going to be bringing Gosser up, and he seems to have recovered from whatever ailment he had. And so they're moving forward with that. We'll have to cross our fingers that there isn't some bigger issue going on here with him and his elbow. The bone spurs thing is scary, so we have to cross our fingers, but that's just, you know, a thing we're going to have to do anyway. And then there's the Jacob Junis of it all. And I just was reading on MLB Trade Rumors. He is now, so everything came back clear. He went and underwent an MRI and a CT scan for taking a baseball off the neck/head on Monday in Pittsburgh when he was out, like, getting some work in during Pirates batting practice. So it sounded like he basically got harassed from Major League, where he's like walking out during batting practice and then takes a shot to the head. Though this was a baseball, not a bat. So it sounds like Junis is going to come back, though Adam McAlvey notes that Pat Murphy recently indicated that the club may look to bring Junis back into the fold as a reliever rather than building him up to start. So they may be looking at him in more of that middle innings role to maybe replace Bryce Wilson and sliding those things around, at least in the short term. So I don't know how that exactly is going to work, but that seems to be the plan in the short term. So anyway, there do seem to be some options here. They have some guys who are close to coming up or back in both Gosser and Junis who can, I think, take this from a, you know, raging emergency to a lower level of concern. But we're going to have to hope that they hit the ground running and are okay to do those things, right?
Absolutely. I think, too, where some of the concern for a lot of folks is coming in is you're running into this in April, not like June or July, right? Yeah. There's a lot of season left to play.
Yes.
A lot of innings left to cover, and it's kind of making you wonder how they do it. And we do have a Patreon question on that. JVT is asking, looking at the pitching rotation, how many innings will it take to cover the season with what the Brewers have in their organization today? If possible, it'd be great to break it down by player, what the Brewers will need from that in terms of innings pitched and or starts remaining. And feel free to include pitchers on the IL that should return at some point. So, Ryan, you did some of this too. Just doing the quick math, they've got, after Sunday, 135 games left, so 9-ish innings per game. They've got 1,215 innings left to cover. How do you want to do that, Ryan?
Well, so the question isn't covering the innings. I mean, they have professional pitchers who they're going to call up or pick up off the street or whatever. The question is covering them with like cromulent big league pitchers. You need, you know, like decent big league pitchers. And they still have a large number of those. It's just going to be in a somewhat unorthodox way. I think even more than they were hoping. I think they were hoping to get, you know, more of a traditional starting role from Wade Miley. Colin Ray has been five and dive, but he's still been, you know, he has been consistently getting to that five at least for the most part. So I think his last start, maybe he didn't on Saturday. Saturday was a little, or was it Friday? Yeah, I think it was Friday. But anyways, it may have been a little bit rough, but I think they're getting those innings from those guys. The question is just like, how are you going to deploy these guys? And I already kind of mentioned it. You have guys like Brian Hudson and Bryce Wilson and Jacob Junis and some of these guys who are meant to sort of be guys who could pitch maybe, you know, 2 to 3 innings every 3 to 4 days, and that was a big part of the equation here. And if that does hold up, if those guys are able to do that, I think you could still do this. But the losing Miley, I think definitely they were already going to be in the market for a starter of some sort. I think that pursuit has to have been amped up by this. I just don't know. It's not really the time of the year for this. It's a tough time. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah.
Yeah, at this time of year, it's street free agents or nothing. Nobody's going to be looking to make major deals yet, except maybe the White Sox.
Yeah, yikes.
Who are on pace to lose, I believe, 142 games at the moment.
Can I interest you in an Eric Fetty, Paul?
I don't know who that is.
He's the guy that just came back from Japan and is actually off to a really, really good start with the White Sox. He's like the one good thing that they have going for them, which makes me think they probably wouldn't just turn around and be like, oh, hey, it's the one thing, our one thing that our fans have to hold on to as hope. We're going to be like, nah, we'll just send it out right away.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But yeah, like this is just scraping the bottom of the barrel at this point. That's all that there is going to be available. Like even Julio Teheran is a Cub at the moment, or a minor league Cub. So, you know, you can't even get that guy right now. So, but you need people. Like even your 40 man stretched pretty thin at this point. Like there's not a lot of guys to call up.
Yeah. And it sucks. Guys like JB Bukauskas was doing a job for them. And he was also in this, like he could go out and pitch like give you 40 pitches and go like 2 1/3. And that was an important thing that they had going, and he was doing it pretty well. And then he gets hurt. And yeah, they really just have a lot of this going on. And don't forget, Aaron Ashby is still out there. Spencer did mention, and I agreed, and we concurred with the question asker. Do you just want Aaron Ashby to get some time in AAA to help like get back to where he was and to build up? And we both said yes. So Aaron Ashby is not an ideal solution, but he is somebody, you know, for a few months from now, hopefully, that they can potentially turn to. But yeah, there's a lot of Jared Koenig really, really has done a job. Like, that man really did a job for us in the end of the Pittsburgh series and the and on Friday night. He pitched both of the extra innings, right? And gave up the one run in the 10th. But that was
the win both times, didn't he?
He might have, yeah. Because, he did, I think, on Thursday as well. He got the zombie runner in, scored on him in the 10th. But then in the 11th, he got out of it. And so they won. So guys like that are going to have to play a big role here, as is a guy we haven't talked about yet because we have a question coming. I'm just going to save that.
Sure. Before we get to that, we do have another Patreon question, just maybe more philosophical about the Brewers' strategy in building this pitching staff. So Steve S. is wondering, or writing in on Patreon, I understand that the Brewers have rejected the quote-unquote traditional starting rotation idea broadly. This is then described as an intentional plan, and this intentionally is echoed by Brewers personnel and outside analysts. I do worry that we have become so entrenched in defending that this is a plan that we have lost sight of being able to critique it properly, where any critique is almost dismissed as a lack of understanding of the plan, or that the individual just doesn't get how their strategy works. I think that's a whole interesting conversation in itself. If you'd like to have it on expectation creation and how we consume messages, but if you want a more pointed question, plainly, for their plan to be successful, they also needed pitching depth, in my opinion. Is it fair to say that they didn't create enough pitching depth for this plan to be working as it's intended? So, Paul, kind of an interesting philosophical idea here, but what's your take on that?
So, first of all, I do think this is a plan by necessity. They will do it if they need to, but when they did have Burns and Woodruff, they were perfectly happy to let those two in particular go a normal starter's length deep into games with some routine. So it's not like they're unwilling to do that when they have the horses to do it. It's just that if they have guys who aren't like aces, they protect them by not exposing them to as much of the third time through the order as they possibly can. I do think it is fair to say that they have understaffed for it this year. Now, they have been unlucky. They have a zillion guys on the IL, and that is just, you know, some predictable. Wade Miley being on the IL is completely predictable, but many not. And so this is bad luck, but, it honestly could also be worse. Like, Freddie gets hurt sometimes, and he hasn't yet. So this isn't even like the worst case scenario. This is just a bad scenario. But yeah, like, I think that's totally fair criticism. They could use another innings eater or two just to scuffle through these situations as they come up. They probably should have done that before the season started, and now they're going to pay for it.
Yeah, I think part of the issue here, though, is going back to his original idea that the Brewers have rejected the traditional starting rotation. I think mostly this is that the traditional starting rotation is dead, and teams have, like, MLB is not what it used to be in terms of 200 inning guys. That's not the game anymore. That's not how things work. It has changed, and the Brewers are kind of caught in the middle of this. And I think we sort of got a false sense of it, as Paul was talking about, over the last few years, where because they had Burns, because they had Woodruff, who are these traditional sort of horse guys who could go out and throw, you know, 6+ innings at a clip and put up a 200 inning pace. Burns was up over 200 innings in some of these years. That's more outliery in this game these days. Yep. Those guys are the exception. That's not what's standard anymore. And so the Brewers have had to adjust to just the way the game is now. And they're making these adjustments with everybody else. And so it feels like it's a big departure from the past, because we kind of had the outlier team in the last few years, but this has really been going on. And the Brewers did go through this. We saw it very much so in 2018, remember 2018 was this year where they were scraping things together. 2018 and 19, they were scraping things together rotation-wise and just trying to get by and turn it over to a deep, good bullpen. And I think that's more of what's going on here than anything else. So, yeah, I mean, did they create enough pitching depth for this year? Well, it depends what your goal was. What were they thinking that they were going to be this year? And I think we sort of, at the beginning of the season, were all thinking, this is like an 80-win team. Well, if it's an 80-win team, you're not necessarily going to go out and throw a bunch of money at a guy to potentially be a bad innings eater, basically. And maybe they should have looked at somebody like a Lance Lynn, who's pathetically boring and somebody that fans would, you know, hate watching when he's off because he just gets, you know, beaten up, but has offered some value to the Cardinals this year. And I guess to the Dodgers last year after they traded for him somewhat, because he did a job against the Brewers last year when we played him, but he otherwise hasn't been that good. Maybe there's value in somebody like that, but it also just was sort of a situation of coming into this year, what really were their expectations? And I think I was the high guy on it, and I basically, what did I have met 82 wins? So it sort of becomes a question of like, what do you want to try to do when you're projecting yourself to be, you know, not really in the thick of the playoff race? And here they are, they've been much better than expected. I think maybe they were hoping it was going to go like this, but I don't know that they necessarily expected it, because if they had, I think they would have done a little bit more. So this gets into a lot of chicken or egg questions here.
It definitely does feel like, yeah, they thought maybe they could make another push with a younger group, but they also didn't want to, you know, block access or early spots for a lot of the younger guys like Gosser, who may have been coming up in the first few weeks, right? Like, you're not going to go get Lance Lynn and try to be an 84 win team against an 82 win team and maybe block a spot in the process too. So, you know, and they did have depth. It's just, as you guys said, everybody got hurt all at once too. I think, yeah, you know, it was just bad sequencing there.
And right away, like the fact exactly that it just happened so fast, is it makes the whole thing look shakier than I think it was expected to be too.
Sure. All right. PJ Wessels, our next Patreon question, another pitching question, saying up the Toffees. I don't know what that is. So Ryan, I'm assuming that's a soccer thing.
Wessels, you have the heart of a murderer.
Okay. The pitching shuffling in the rotation and bullpen feels unprecedented. Is it just the success making it feel special? Also, is there anything similar to this in other sports? So I know, Paul, you were off last week, but Ryan mentioned wherever the Brewers ranked in terms of early season transactions. I forget what that number was. It wasn't at the top, but it was pretty close to the top.
Yeah, it was high.
Yeah. So I guess, Paul, does this feel extra unusual even for the Brewers? And can you even compare it to something in like football or another sport?
I don't really think so. Most of this is the result of, I feel like, just bad luck more than anything else and having to negotiate a tricky personnel situation. So no, I don't think it's really comparable to anything else. And while they choose to do this, to shuttle people a lot as a strategy, that's not what this is. This is just surviving. So don't compare survival to anything else.
Yep, I would go with that up and down. I mean, I do think about how, like, it's kind of like the way the NFL practice squads get used, but even that's a little bit different than it used to be, isn't it? Like, it's not quite the same sort of AAA situation as before.
Yeah, you only get a certain number of elevations per year before you have to sign somebody. It's actually become a little more like baseball, where like you almost have sort of Rule 5 stuff happen at some point. Huh. So that is true. But, you know, even there, that's, you'll keep a couple guys around as just in case insurance. But it's not as frequently used. The Packers actually do make use of it with their running backs quite a bit. Like, Patrick Taylor has been on the practice squad and call ups like way more than he should be, because they do give him some weird contract every once in a while. But this situation, well, the Brewers do lean on it. Right now, they're just like trying to survive. So,
yeah.
All right. Lucroy Suitcase wants to know, do you have any data or thoughts on if Tobias Myers could be good, or is this just spaghetti? It was a bit shaky at times, but I thought he did pretty well for a major league debut against Pittsburgh. You know, also similar story, I would say, on Sunday, you know, hung a 94 mile an hour fastball to Aaron Judge, and it promptly got deposited in the seats, but can't get too mad about that. And then did make a bad slider pitch or pitch location to Anthony Volpe on the three run homer that kind of broke his back. That was the big bad pitch. But Ryan, I know, you know, Spencer and others are really intrigued by Tobias Myers. He does have, you know, top 10 former pick pedigree, right? So I think there's a reason, as Spencer was saying last week, so many smart orgs have kind of taken a look at him because there might be something there. What do you think?
Yeah, I've been impressed early on here. I've watched both of those starts now, and I have been reasonably impressed with what he's doing. And yes, today's game against the Yankees, that's a killer lineup, and he made a couple of really bad pitches, and the Yankees just absolutely went to town on him. And that's going to happen. You're going to have those situations happen. But so Spencer talked about this on last week's pod. You could see the fastball is a really, really good pitch. That is a pitch that it has good shape characteristics. Hitters do not do a real good job squaring it up most of the time. If he can locate it reasonably well, it's a good pitch. He has it's not really a four pitch or not really a five pitch mix. It's more like he has a four seamer, a cutter, and a curveball that he's throwing pretty frequently. There's a slider that he mixes in and a changeup that's almost like a Ben Sheets. It's showing up like, you know, 4% of the time. It's not that much. I don't have the updated numbers after today's stat on StatCast, but he has a sort of an array here of pitches that he can use. And yeah, this is a guy who has some pedigree. And I when we talked about it last week, I mentioned that I was concerned at this idea that it was like six organizations in 8 years or whatever. And that's a lot, and it does make you a little bit nervous. But as Spencer pointed out, as you said, James, it's a lot of smart organizations, so they're clearly seeing stuff that they like in him. So I got to just kind of ride with it. I think this is more than spaghetti. This is better than spaghetti. This is all what, right, like fettuccine alfredo? Is that better than spaghetti?
Yeah. Penne? What's better than spaghetti? Yeah.
A lot pretty of much everything.
Yeah. Yeah, spaghetti is pretty mediocre, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, get some good pasta.
All right.
Angel hair.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. There we go.
The refined version of spaghetti.
But it's delicate. Probably less sticky on the wall if it's more, you know, I don't know. All right. Bryce Trosin, our next question, asking if his next start goes well in Nashville, we have to think it's Bobby Gasser time, right? So, Ryan, you were mentioning Pat Murphy says maybe one more start. If things go well, we may see him. So looking like early May, what do you think?
Yeah, I think early May is, I think that's exactly right. And fingers crossed, things are going well health-wise for him. I think they would be careful with him if they weren't. So fingers crossed on that. And I'm looking forward to finally seeing him. It feels like we've been waiting a long time to see him just because there's never really a good opportunity opened up last year. So we've really been waiting a while, but it hasn't actually been. I mean, the Brewers traded for him and he had barely pitched in Double-A, and that was in the second half of 2022. So it's not like this has been an inordinately long amount of time. He hasn't been sitting and marinating in Triple-A for like three seasons. It's this is fairly normal timing, but it does feel like a long time.
I am interested and hopeful to see that. You know, I feel like at least he can provide a higher ceiling than the Joe Rosses of the world, right, Paul?
Yeah, I think that's why we've all been so excited to see him. Is we've had on our minds the potential replacements for Woodruff, less so because he's still on the team, but Burns. Not that Gosser's got that in him, maybe he does, but you're certainly looking for somebody to be a reliable starter with actual upside to being a good starter who you can rely on, and he's one of the guys we actually have to do that. So this is the opposite of spaghetti. This is the future, and I think we're just all waiting to see what we may actually have here.
Ian Pomplin, writing on Patreon, I will turn in my Gary Sanchez doubter card, at least temporarily. He did have a good weekend, a revenge series against the Yankees for Gary Sanchez. For the question, Ian says, we seem to have a crisis with starting pitchers. Who are some targets the Brewers could sign to replace the injured? We've mentioned a lot of puzzled faces in the video feed since you guys can't see. And as we mentioned, the Julio Teherans of the world already scooped up. So, Ryan, Paul, anybody have anybody out there that that might be worth kicking the tires on at this point?
I think it's guys coming back from injury. It's Gosser, Junis. I think those are the guys as far as bringing people in.
Like nobody's got Zach, right? Nobody's got Greinke. He's still out there doing nothing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you could try that.
I got nothing. That's all I got.
Yeah. What's the only shot?
I have Zach Greinke, just so I know where Zach Greinke is, and I don't think he's anywhere. So.
Yeah, I don't know. Street free agents, MLB. I mean, like, what? This is. Who would have ever predicted last year that Julio Teherán would come in and, one, pitch at all, and, two, do the job that he did? I mean, that was so, you know, it was so unfathomable. You can go back and listen to the episodes at the time. We were laughing about it, the possibility of it, and then it just happened. This is not the sort of thing you can plan. The one thing that I will say is they seem really well set up to take veterans off the street in this kind of situation and be able to put them into like a successful position in that, one, they can give them outstanding defense behind them. So they're going to, you know, when they put the balls in play, because most of these guys are not going to be big strikeout guys, because if they were big strikeout guys, they wouldn't be on the street. So most of these guys, like, you're going to be able to turn them into better pitchers than they might otherwise be because of good defense. And the other thing is the Brewers, I think, just have a knack. And, like, Chris Hook seems to be really, really, really good at getting guys to, like, execute a game plan and go in and say, especially veterans who kind of have a little wiliness to them and sort of know how they throw and they know their stuff, maybe understand their limitations a little bit better. Chris Hook is good at working with those guys and just saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is what we can kind of do and get away with. And this is how we're going to proceed. That has generally worked pretty well for them. But in terms of like specific names, I got nothing.
It's not the time of year for this to be something you need. It just isn't.
Greinke is available, still unsigned. So. Dick Mountain's out there, Ryan. Rich Hill, all 44 years old of him. Still a free agent.
I was actually just pulling up the free agent pitchers, and it's a pretty good list. I assume some of these guys have like exploded elbows and stuff.
Yeah.
By good list, I mean a good list of pitchers from like 2008.
Right.
Right. You got Thor on there.
Thor's on there. Yeah.
Yeah. Vince Velasquez.
Bumgarner, he's on there.
Yeah.
Oh, this is... No.
But I don't want him. He's just on there.
No, that's fair.
You know things are bad when even Dallas Keuchel has been scooped up by somebody. Yep. So, yeah.
Maybe you could lure a Corey Kluber out of retirement.
There you go. All right. Jay Google, our next question this week, asking, we are 1/6 of the way through the season. What's been some of the best and some of the worst for the Brewers so far? Paul, what do you think? Best, worst through the first month or so?
Honestly, most of the worst seems to just be guys who are doing their best to fill in spots. Like, I have a hard time actually criticizing too many guys on the
team.
It's
not their fault.
It's really not their fault. And like, their worst regular batter has been Churio, which is fine. And he's looked, you know, good in certain ways that you would like him to look good in. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to criticize Jake Bowers after he, you know, went an inning and almost hit for the cycle today. and like Weimer's only been up for a cup of coffee, so like I feel like the pitchers are put in situations where it's amazing they've succeeded as well as they have, and for the most part the hitting's just been quite good. So I don't have a big disappointment out there. Like even like Self Relic, I kind of think he's been like the worst regular bat, but it's not terrible. He's been okay.
Yeah, he almost hit one out today.
Yeah. Yes, he did. So, I don't have a bad. I have nothing bad to say about this team. all of my blame is foisted on the front office for just not giving them enough depth. That's all I got. So as far as like exceeding expectations, there's a ton of guys. Everybody's been pretty good. Like Freddie's been a true number one. Has maybe, if anything, got a little unlucky just looking at his peripherals more than anything. Colin Ray's been great. They would be a disaster without him. A lot of the spaghetti in the starting staff has been fine. DL Hall, you know, DL Hall is probably the answer, but he's hurt. So, I mean, how much blame are you going to give him for that? All the bullpen's been phenomenal. William Contreras is like an MVP candidate. I guess maybe Christian Yelich's back would be the other LVP, but you know, is what it is there. But Bryce Turang is still has a 143 OPS plus. Hasn't turned into a pumpkin yet, even after we've been saying it week after week after week. So the whole offense is good. All of their pitchers are good. They just need more pitching to get through this. That's really it.
Yeah, even today, Bryce Turang smoked a baseball right to Aaron Judge. I think it was like a 720 expected batting average with the bases loaded. And it could have potentially, I mean, this was after already the really terrible bad inning, but it could have maybe sparked something of a rally. And that just went right into a glove. So that was due to happen for him because he's been, you know, having a lot of things that shouldn't have been falling for him. But yeah, he's in a really good position right now. Joey Ortiz has looked really good early, aside from a few errant throws. But you can see on defense why everybody's so excited about him, because he does have such good hands and just like the movements and everything. He just needs to work on the setting and throwing a little bit.
Yep, and it's a gun, too. You can tell why he cheats on his mechanics, too, because he can, which is not always the best thing in the world.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. Obviously, Blake Perkins, you can never expect this sort of a thing from somebody. Amazing. Yeah.
Team MVP Blake Perkins. Yeah.
Yeah. He's been absolutely phenomenal. So, and William Contreras has, they wrote in the Journal Sentinel this week, William Contreras has emerged as one of the best players in baseball. So, you love to see all of that.
You could say like Owen Miller's disappointing. No, he isn't. Owen Miller sucks. This is what he is. He's not disappointing. He is pointing. That's what he is.
Yes. So, Owen Miller's pointing is the title of the episode. So,
there's so many good potential headlines for this week. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. But yeah, over on the pitching side, DL Hall has been a disappointment, but I was kind of skeptical that he was going to be a starter anyway. So, and then it's the injuries. So the team LVP at this point is just like injury.
Yeah.
Or the medical staff.
Oh yeah, or the medical staff.
I don't know if Paul wants to share it publicly, his feelings on the medical staff.
Not doing that.
Nope. We'll save that for the group chat. All right, Jeffrey Amenecker asking, since you guys brought up this person, how long does it have to stay like this before Jackson Chourio is sent down? I imagine once Yelich is back, if it's still like this, they'd seriously consider it. I don't know. I've mixed feelings on this because part of me is like, well, he's been a slow starter at every level, right? Before he's kind of figured it out, and he kind of needs to adjust. At the same time, Orioles just sent down Jackson Holliday this past week, although Jackson Holliday was struggling something mighty. He struck out in like, 20 of his 30 at bats or something crazy like that. Like, that's a different scenario. But Ryan, I guess, when would you consider sending Jackson Chourio down?
Well, okay, so there's a couple different things to consider here. And before we go into that, I want to talk about the Jackson Holliday thing, because that's what it looks like when somebody's actually being overmatched at the big league level and they're just like not quite ready for it, or they just, they weren't set. And he was murdering baseballs in AAA. Like, Jackson Holliday was absolutely, trust me, I have him on multiple dynasty teams, and he was murdering baseballs in AAA. I kept waiting, when is he going to get called up? So that's what actually struggling looks like. And so Chourio's not that. That's not what has been happening. You can see he's making adjustments. He's getting better and doing some things. He slapped a ball late the other way today, and he had some really unfortunate luck. He came up with two outs and runners on first and second, three straight plate appearances to open the game today, and made contact all three times and drove a couple of baseballs, but all of them ended up being outs. And I think that that's part of the thing with somebody like Chourio. He's going to learn, And I think the number one problem with what we need to set him down is, well, why are you setting him down? Is it that he needs to fix something? Like we talked about, like with Joey Weimer, where it's Joey Weimer learned a new swing, and that doesn't seem to be working for him. And I think he legitimately needs to like go swing and like get his groove going again against legitimately bad pitchers or worse pitchers than big leaguers. But he's up in the majors right now because they need him, right? They have an injury situation. They need Weimer up here, so that's why he's up. But if you send Chirio down, what can he accomplish by being down there? What is hitting non-major league pitching going to accomplish for Jackson Chirio at this point? And I would question, from a developmental standpoint, why would you send him down? Are you actually going to accomplish anything by doing that? Because we know he can hit minor league pitching. We've seen that a lot. It's a matter of he needs to get better at more consistently hitting big league pitching, and you can only do that in the big leagues. So I think you need to stick with him for a while, unless there's something specific that they identify that's like, well, we want him to work on this specific thing, and they think that that can be done at AAA or would better be done at AAA. I think you just have to ride it out for quite a while here.
Yeah, I agree with that. He needs to get experience to actually get acclimated to it. He hasn't been that bad. My one worry is he is small sample size, but developing reverse platoon splits at the moment, which... pound some lefties. Don't let the Brewers get India, man. Don't do that. But yeah, you let him hit his way out of this. There's no reason not to, especially because the rest of the offense is playing so good. Like you can do this. This is fine. Like let him learn. And if he starts to become hopeless and he needs a confidence boost, okay, fine. Send him down for a week or two. But we're not to that point yet. And their attitude with him should be just, hey, don't worry about it. Don't press. Get used to it. Get used to the speed, and it'll all come.
Yeah, there's adjustments he's going to need to make. Batters are already attacking him. Jack Stern wrote about this week that pitchers have adjusted to him and kind of know how to attack him. I would suggest you seek out that article from Jack Stern over at Brewer Fanatic, because he's already sort of being adjusted to it, and so he needs to figure out how to adjust back.
Steve Romanesco, our next question, saying, it's been cool to see Lucas Ursig make it as a reliever, albeit on the A's, and do well so far this year. Who are some former prospects no longer in the system you still think fondly of or check up on? Ryan, do you have any, you know, former Flames that you still check up on every once in a while?
I mean, it literally is kind of Ursig. That was the guy, because I was a huge fan. I thought he was going to be a really good third baseman for them, and then his career just didn't take a turn, and it went through personal stuff, and it's so awesome to see him sort of reemerge here as a guy who is throwing 100 out of the bullpen, which led to somebody asking the question, like, what were the Brewers ever doing with him at third base if he was throwing 100 miles an hour, was capable of throwing 100 miles an hour off the mound, which I guess is kind of a fair question, though I think it was because he wanted to do it and it looked like he was going to be a better player than, because I think his ceiling as a pitcher was always reliever. He was never going to be like a starter. So if he could be an everyday position player, that's better than being a reliever. So you would try it. And a lot of people did think he could actually potentially be an everyday position player too, but that's the one that stands out. Paul, you go, and I'll see if I can figure someone else out here.
I don't follow prospects, but Estuary Ruiz,
yeah,
just for amazement, I guess.
Exactly. If anyone's wondering, Keston here is hitting 300, 333, 489 in Triple-A. So an 822 OPS in Toledo with three home runs, but he's also struck out 26 times in 96 plate appearances. So still very Keston Hira.
Same old Keston.
And only five walks. But I think that's one everyone's going to keep their eye on too, even though it's his age 27 season already. Time flies. Older ones, you know, I always kept my eye on Brett Lowry after the Brewers gave up on him. Chris Davis was always a favorite of mine, so definitely watched him.
The batting average,
Mr. 247. Exactly. But Ryan, how about you?
The guy I was thinking of was, because every time he comes up with the Red Sox, I note it and go look, and that's David Hamilton, who was traded for Hunter Renfro. So it was Alex Benelis and David Hamilton were traded to the Red Sox for Hunter Renfro. And he is currently hitting 211, 286, 316 for a 71 OPS plus in 38 at-bats with the Red Sox. And but he has steals. So that's always been kind of the thing. He is a very, very fast player, but...
All right, let's move on. Patreon question. Michael Parr asking, what is the plan going forward for third base? Is Ortiz just the answer with Dunn going cold? Or do we get more of the Frelick experience once Mitchell gets back? Paul, what do you think about third?
It's probably Ortiz, not really dependent on anybody currently on the team, Dunn included, but really just dependent on Adames more than anything, I suspect, although there's Terang there too. But yeah, I would just pencil him in as the third baseman until there's a big shakeup with starting infielders. But that's where he's going to be. He's good at it.
Yeah, I mean, the plan, hopefully, will be Brock Wilkin not too long from now, or maybe even further down the road, Cooper Pratt, who we talked about a little bit this week, who, by the way, guys, is back from that broken pinky. He's playing again, so we talked about that a little bit on the minor league extra. But yeah, so that's like the long term in this season. Yeah, I think it's Ortiz done if they can get him going again. Maybe that's a thing that could potentially work. It's not Tyler Black.
I was going to say, I've started to see some Tyler Black chatter online, but even if the bat's heating up, the defense at third has been butcherific, right?
Well, he's played one game at third base in AAA. He's been, it was one game there, it was six at DH, and it was like 14. This was last I looked, this was late last week for the minor league pod. It was like 14 at first base, and he's struggling at first too, which I think is a little bit more forgivable because he's learning the position. He's got to learn how to do that. And so he's still figuring out how to do the first base thing. But right now, I mean, he hit two home runs. I don't know if you saw this. He hit two home runs today in AAA. And so people are yelling for him to be brought up. And the problem is twofold. One, they don't have a place to play him. And two, we're not really 100% sure how well the bat is actually going to play against big league pitching. So there's a bunch of questions here. So, but he's not a third baseman. The Brewers are telling us with their actions, they don't think he's a third baseman anymore. Because if they thought he had any chance to be a third baseman, he'd be playing third base right now. And he's not.
Yeah, he's maybe your Jake Bowers replacement eventually. Possibly, if that.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Last question this week. The cheese for Wilson Contreras' wine, saying, create these hot takes from maybe to are you high? Number one, Garrett Mitchell should be traded the second he's off the IL, as his bones are made of glass, skin of paper, and joints of styrofoam. He will never play more than 90 games a season. Number two, Christ himself has finally made his second coming, but for some reason he's going by William Contreras for round two. Number three, Yelich was the one who killed JFK. He has or will hit a ball so hard that it ripped through the space-time continuum, and it just happened to reappear in our dimension right in front of Kennedy's head that fateful day in Dallas. Yeesh. Number four, Anthony Rizzo only wears eye black in a roof-closed environment to get the attention his parents never gave him, because he knows deep down they always resented him for ruining their marriage.
Okay. So first off, number four is just objectively fact. So we could just like put that one in there.
That one's true.
Yeah. So that one's good. Number one, I have my fears. The Garrett Mitchell thing. I have my fears about this. We'll see. But I also have fears about, like, I know he's a great defender. I know he's a great base runner, but the bat.
Hard disagree on Garrett Mitchell. You should not trade him the minute he comes off of the IL. You should trade him 3 weeks after he comes off the IL, after he's had a nice little hot streak to confirm the priors that everybody has about the good stretch he had last time he was healthy. Then you should trade him immediately.
Yeah, the problem with that is fans would love to trade for him, like fans of other teams might, but I think most other GMs are going to have the same questions that we have about him, which is he ever going to stay healthy, and can he actually hit the ball without striking out a ton?
Trade him to the White Sox. It's problem solved.
That, yeah, okay, that might actually be the play.
Remember that stretch where the Brewers like traded for a White Sox reliever every single year, like 3 or 4 years in a row?
Yeah.
We should start that up again. Yeah, exactly.
By the way, really quick credit taking. I have been ridiculing the White Sox since well before the season started as as like worse than the A's, like one of the worst teams in baseball. And they are on pace to be like literally the worst team in baseball history at the moment. So just, yeah, that organization should be forced to sell the team. They do not have any clue what they're doing at all. Not even a little.
Didn't they just beat the Rays in a series who are coincidentally...
They swept the Rays,
but they're still on pace to lose 140 games. They've been shut out in a third of their games.
That part was really stunning because they were a bad team coming into the season, but then they immediately lose Mancata, Eloy, and Robert. And so they lose their three best hitters, like by far their three best hitters. So yeah, that isn't going to help matters there any.
No.
What a sad situation that whole thing is. And the vibes are just terrible down there.
Yeah. And even better, because we noted this too, the White Sox ineligible for the draft lottery. So the highest they can pick is 10th.
That is right.
Because they've been so incompetent for so long. And MLB put that in the rules that you can only be in the lottery for so many consecutive seasons.
Yep.
It's amazing.
And cheese, your Yelich take is high. So I think we can wrap this puppy up.
Yeah.
All right. That'll do it for questions this week. Thank you, everybody who sent one in. We also have a ton of new patrons to shout out and give thanks to for signing up, whether they're baseball listeners or football listeners. You still get the shout out on this podcast. So, Ryan, who do we have joining up in the last week?
Welcome to Caleb Kleinhans, Cameron Olson, John Thomas, Dr. Churlish, and Pork Francis. It's not Pope Francis. That would be pretty cool if Pope Francis was listening, but Pork Francis is the other one there. So yeah, thanks for joining up. I'm going to assume some of you signed up for the bonus content for the draft coverage this week. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yep. If so, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Appreciate sticking with us all.
Absolutely. With that, we'll wrap things up. Paul's been very busy this past week with drafting stuff and all that. So
I did draft coverage and invented a whole new podcast network. So welcome, everybody.
Yeah. How hard is that?
Surprisingly annoying.
Yeah, that's true. All right. But go check that out as well. Paul, you want to give a plug for that? What's the name?
Sure. If you are a fan of reporting is eligible at the Acme Packing Company feed and the other Acme Packing Company podcasts that SB Nation saw fit to destroy, we reformed under Frozen Tundra Frequencies. So you can find all those podcasts there. And Justice is the one who's legally difficult because, as an actual employee. So he'll be around, I'm sure. But Tyler and Zach and Tex are all podcasting there and us as well. So simulcast, just like we were before. Go check that out. Follow those guys. They do good work. And stick with that.
Awesome. Love to see everybody kind of rebounded, found a new place. Thanks. Thanks to you, Paul. So there's that. And a reminder, if you're not a patron here yet, go to patreon.com/mketailgate. $2 a month gets questions answered on both podcasts. That'll do it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Hopefully, the Brewers can bounce back from getting their heads kicked in by the Yankees over the weekend and the bats wake up. We will be back next week to recap everything that happens. Hopefully no more arms explode. We'll see what develops. In the meantime, stay well, everybody. Have a good one. We'll see you next time on Milwaukee's Tailgate. There with the band, it's not what I am. Even though the zip code has changed, I might smile and joy where I'm currently employed. Your soul can't be rearranged. It's hard to understand. So fair weather.